So in this panel, we have four presentations that are really all about understanding how to improve the transition to adulthood and adult outcomes, but really by trying to strengthen the environment around the person with ASD. So there are, of course, a number of great interventions that are coming online that are really aimed at building skills, building reducing problem behaviors, things of that sort, among the adults themselves. But another tact here is to really try to build up supportive systems around that person, and that's what these presentations are attempting to do. So first we'll have Lisa Rubel from the University of Kentucky, and she's going to talk about an intervention to improve transition planning in the schools. Then I'll be talking about our parent training intervention to improve service access. Next we'll have Craig Thompson from Curtin University, who will be talking about peer mentoring for university students. And then finally Leanne Smith, who will be talking about interventions to reduce parenting stress. And the way that this format is going to go here is we'll each give our talks and then have a minute or two for questions at the end. Our discussant, Kara Hume, sadly was unable to come to the to INFAR, actually. And so we're going to take that time at the end, although we'll very much miss her input. We'll take that time for just more of a group question and answer session here for the last 10 minutes. So I think that's it. They showed me how to do this, and I was semi-paying attention.
Okay. Ah. There we go. Thank you. Yeah. Hi, everyone. Thank you for being here today. I'm going to set my little timer, and then they've got a visual support for me out there, too. Okay. So for all children, children with autism, children without autism, we know that educational outcomes are the result of the interaction between the teacher and the student. In fact, engagement is a common element across all effective programs for children with autism. But to have high-quality student-teacher interaction or engagement, we need a structure and a process that ensures that we're targeting the right goal for that particular student and the right personalized teaching plan. So this decision-making process comes from the overlapping influence of these three circles that are all equally important: the evidence-based practice, the characteristics of the child, preferences, strengths, challenges, as well as the teacher resources and experiences. And I forgot to change this, so here you go. There it is. And this comes from an evidence-based practice and psychology framework that we recently discussed in a paper about how in autism we've have a lot more information about our evidence-based practice, but less information about those other two equally important areas. So the work that we've been doing to help create this process and this structure that leads to good educational decision-making is called COMPASS. And this is a consultation model we've been working with over several years. It was intentionally developed with autism in mind, an autism-specific program planning, decision-making process for gaining consensus on the child's goals, consensus between home and school, and also ensuring that there was equal understanding at home and school about the child's environment in both of those places. It's also based on the assumption that all children have the ability to learn, and learning is influenced by the environment in addition to those individual factors. Proactive problem solving is encouraged and is done on an ongoing basis so that we're not dealing reactively and in a crisis mode. And it provides a link to research-supported practices. But it also includes just good general consulting features. And that is the outcomes-based monitoring and the performance feedback and problem solving. The other aspect I think that's really unique about consultation as an intervention is this multiplier effect. It's well suited for meeting the high needs of better trained and supported teachers. And by increasing the skills of teachers, then we can serve a larger number of students more effectively. Now, the study consultation, it's complex because we have these three different areas that we have to consider. And this comes from the work of Dunst and Trivett and colleagues. So the study of consultation involves the implementation practice. And this doesn't have to be consultation. It can be other professional development, other kinds of training. So it's what the trainer or the consultant does, and in our case it's Compass, to intervene and impact the next level, the intervention practice. And this is what the teacher or the clinician, the caregiver might do. In our case, that is improved instructional quality. And then that has an impact on the practice outcome, and that, in our case, is the student level and their IEP outcomes. So these are all the features that we've studied. Now, I just want to briefly describe what Compass looks like. And again, this is a school-based teacher-parent consulting intervention. And there's an initial consultation that we bring together the parent and teacher that lasts about 2.5 to 3 hours. And this could be split up in 2 sessions. During this meeting, we review our philosophy, and this is this philosophy of environmental and personal challenges and supports, really focusing on that environmental aspect, as well as our evidence-based practices for effective programs for young children. We then discuss the Compass profile, and that's just basically forms that the teacher and parent have completed about the child's strengths and challenges relating to problem behaviors, their likes, their preferences, their frustrations and fears, social skills with adults and peers, communication, the form and function, as well as sensory issues and learning work behavior skills. And then we identify key goals based on this conversation that focus on social skills, communication skills, or the independent learning skills. And then we conclude with developing the personalized teaching plan that takes into account all this information that was shared. Now, after this initial consultation, we asked the teachers to come back and update their IEPs. And we actually found that this is an active ingredient in our intervention because it really helps the teacher focus and to stay on target with that particular goal, and helps to organize behaviors. I think this in itself could be something to look at further. But I also think it's, you know, we don't say you have to update the IEP. We strongly recommend it. But I think it is also an indicator of how much they buy into the whole thing as well. But after this initial meeting then, and they update the IEP, we have 4 follow-up teacher coaching sessions that last about an hour. And overall, we spend less than 10 hours with the teacher throughout the school year. So that's on average about an hour a month for that individual student. Now, during the coaching sessions, we have a systematic process that we go through. First, we ask the teachers to provide us some kind of sampling for the young kids. It was videotapes of them implementing the teaching plans. That allowed us to do the performance feedback on how well they implemented the plans, but also the progress monitoring using goal attainment scaling about how much progress the student's making. Then we would adapt the teaching plans if necessary and then discuss next steps. So it just helped keep everybody organized and moving forward. Now, for this study, I'm going to describe our mixed methods approach for adapting Compass for transition age youth. This was necessary because, again, those RCTs were focused on children between the 3 and 8 years of age. So to help us understand what we needed to adapt, we conducted 10 focus groups with 40 stakeholders. And these included individuals with ASD, their parents, policymakers, school providers, adult service providers. We asked general questions about transition. What's good transition planning? How would we know it if we saw it? What's good transition planning implementation? What would that look like? And then what we did was analyzed these qualitative interviews and identified 15 themes. I'm not going to spend time on these themes. We've got a paper that's been submitted, and I can share more information with you afterwards. I'm really here to talk more about the RCT part. But we use these themes to help us think about what do we need to change with Compass for this age group. And it resulted in these 4 general adaptations, altering our assessment, altering our handouts or creating new handouts often in our case, altering our consultation itself and redefining our key players. For altering our assessment, this included that we needed to have a discussion about goals for post-secondary outcomes. So we added questions about that into our assessment. Age-appropriate questions, because in our younger kids, we talked about play skills and we used different language for the older kids. Also, we had to convert our questionnaires to be able to be completed by the individuals with autism themselves. So we had self-reported questionnaires. And they were, most of our students participated in the consultation. And we also needed to make sure that we addressed the needs across the spectrum in the questionnaires. Our handouts that we had to adapt or create, dealt mainly about services. What does the adult service system look like? What questions do you have maybe about guardianship or social security, transition, the laws, and a timeline and the roles of key players? Altering the consultation, we needed to make sure that we've talked about those post-secondary goals, and also discussion about those goals included not just what they're going to do during the day and how they're going to get around, you know, driving or transportation, but also friendships, and leisure skills, leisure activities, budgeting, and I think that was it, yeah, for those. And then for redefining our key players, we really need to have vocational rehabilitation at the table. We also needed, we learned that parents became a real critical piece of the coaching session. For the little kids, it was primarily the teachers implementing the plans. But for those post-secondary goals, that really fell on the parent. And so we learned that we really needed to be flexible. How do we get parents engaged? How do we set up those opportunities for that involvement? So that might include that they participate by phone, or if they couldn't, we had to make sure that we made phone calls to them afterwards. And they all got a summary report of each coaching session. Okay. So this slide describes two aspects, again, related to the adaptation of Compass. To help guide the way that we were putting this information together and thinking about this more systematically, we used a consolidated framework for implementation research that considers these four primary areas critical for implementation: the characteristics of the intervention itself, the settings, inner-outer setting variables, characteristics of the individuals, and the implementation process. So we applied our 15 themes that we identified under these areas. And as an example below, I just pulled one out to give you an idea of how we try to link this together. So we had one theme that came up from not only parents but also teachers was the need for a navigator or a coordinator. And this referred to the need for someone to help parents through the different services and the different options. And this resulted in our handout. I talked about the altered handouts, two of them. One was a top 10 list of things to do for your transition age youth, and then the other one was a transition process resource guide that, again, talked about the laws and the key players and what vocational rehabilitation did. So this has been a challenging study. I didn't realize how difficult we made it on ourselves. And the RCT consort diagram, we approached 150 teachers, ended up with a sample size of 20 teachers, 20 parents, and 20 students. Just the recruitment process itself, I think, informs why we're seeing such poor post-secondary outcomes. What we found was we set the high goal of only including students that were in that final year of school. That's because it was a short study. So we started it last year, our RCT. Got those kids through. Now we have this year that we're starting. We're trying to figure out how we can get as high sample as possible, but see what happens after school. And so we only wanted students in that final year. Well, in our first year, we found out that none of the students were staying through 21. All the parents, regardless of level of functioning, were not keeping their kids in school. So when we would call and say, okay, you're a teacher, you have a student with autism, is this their final year? Well, I really don't know. Yeah, I think it is. You know, so that we had to really, we really were surprised by that. And so it just made the job that much more difficult to try to recruit students in their final year. I was also concerned maybe parents didn't know that this was their federal right here in the U.S. for special education law. So I talked to all of the parents, and responses range from school's been so stressful, we just want to get him out when we can, or it's a backup plan. We're going to try this plan. If it doesn't work, we'll come back to the school. But most of them just said, we're just done with the school system. So this speaks a whole lot to our lack of environmental supports and need to really improve this. So our participants, we had, as I mentioned, we our recruitment process took a different structure. So for most autism research, we go to parents and recruit. But when we're working in the schools, we went to the administrators, got approvals, and then we had to approach special ed directors or the teachers themselves. And then if the parent the teacher said yes, then we randomly selected a student with autism from the teacher's caseload and then approached that parent and that student. The reason why we did this was we wanted to keep doing research in the schools, and we didn't want to put administrators or teachers in an uncomfortable position. If parents said yes, then they go to their teacher, and their teacher may feel coerced to participate. Or they may not have even gotten the release time for the consultations without administration involvement. So had to have teachers that were the case manager oversaw the IEP, and we've learned another new thing with this was, especially for our general education students, they didn't have interactions with the special education teacher. In fact, they had no direct instruction with the special education teacher. So this was another adaptation that we identified that we needed to address. But these were relatively experienced teachers. They've been teaching at least 12 years. On average, had taught 35 students with autism. And all the students, as we mentioned, had to have autism as their eligibility on their IEP for services, as well as completing the ADOS by us. And the average age was 18. You know, that really surprised me. I thought they would be older. And we had 7 of our students actually attend the consultation and the coaching sessions throughout. And 40% of the students were in general education full-time, 40% in special ed full-time, and about 20% were some combination of resource room and general education. Oops. Okay. This is a very busy slide, but I just want to show you with those darker arrows all of where our adaptations fell into place within Compass. So first, we adapted the Compass profile. That's that questionnaire that they completed and that the students also completed. And then we also had questions about services. What services are you getting? What services do you want information on? And that was for the parents. And so we provided all that up front. Then to start the consultation, we discussed plans for after school. So we started off with that discussion of post-secondary goals. And then we developed our core goals and social communication learning skills and linked them, show the relationship between those and the post-secondary goals. We developed our specific teaching plans like we did with the younger children. But what was different was that those post-secondary plans really relied on the parent in the implementation of those plans. And students as much as possible, but often it was the parent. Again, student involvement was encouraged and was really critical for those students in general education. And with our other RCTs with young children, we collected videotapes of implementation of teaching plans. But we couldn't do this across the board, especially for those general education students. So we had to use other types of data to help support our decision-making process about progress monitoring, work samples, other types of data collection that they could provide. But essentially, what we found was there really wasn't any real direct instruction with written teaching plans for the students. And that wasn't totally unusual. It was, we found that similarly with our younger kids, but it was even exacerbated in this age group. So we used goal attainment scaling to monitor progress over our 4 years, our 4 coaching sessions throughout the year. And our final outcome assessment was conducted by someone who was independent of the research team and was unaware of group assignment. The dark arrow means this is where they should be. When we write the goals, we write them for end of the school year attainment. And that's where they should be. So you can see those in the Compass group have met their goals on average compared to the control group. Our year 2 outcomes are being collected this month, so we don't have our final end-of-year data. But you can see during our coaching sessions that we collect student progress on that, it looks like we're going to hit our goal there, that they're going to meet their goal by the end of the school year. So just some, I've got to conclude here, our preliminary key observations. As I mentioned, we've learned a lot from the challenges and the barriers, but also the facilitators to good transition outcomes. And some of our observations, first of all, as I mentioned, the teacher of record may not teach the student. We had some cases where they didn't know the student. So that's when it's really important to have the student involved as much as possible. Parent involvement was critical. We had some parents who were really able to really be engaged in a meaningful way, but we had other parents who need a lot more supports beyond what we were doing with the consultation. Personalized teaching plans are a real facilitator. It's very important to have those. And also clearly articulated plans for those post-secondary outcomes. vocational rehabilitation was extremely difficult to get at the table, rarely came, and if they did get involved, it was the last month of school. And again, what really facilitated outcomes was having those same features of what we had for our young children, the teacher and student performance feedback methods, as well as the teacher and student outcomes based feedback. So in closing, I just want to acknowledge my collaborators and students, as well as our parents and administrators and students with ASD who participated. So that is it. Thank you.